This is a belated recording of the August 22nd environmental law class where we're talking about economic concepts in environmental law. So, one of the key issues with environmental law and economics is the concept of public goods. Public goods are goods to which everyone benefits and you cannot deny access to them. Imagine, if you will, national defense. We all benefit from it. But once someone pays for it, they can't exclude someone else who's a free rider, someone who hasn't paid their fair share, for the benefit generated by that public good. Environmental quality is usually used as a classic public good. So how to incorporate that pricing system is a challenge. So that's sort of the state of play. Now, before we start diving into some of these other concepts that are still up on the board, any questions about the fundamentals here, the paradigm, that environmental law under this approach is simply a matter of requiring the internalization of externalities and having a proper cost that results in a discouragement of unnecessary pollution but efficient production of goods. And that sounds soulless, that's what it's about. Okay, so let's try and make this actually work in practice. So we talk about transactions, we talk about pain. In the real world, particularly we talk about pollution, it ain't that simple. So with that again, I want to talk about the COAST theorem. I want to talk about the idea of collective action and how you reach an efficient allocation based on the initial allocation of property rights. Before we begin, I know all of you have diligently done the reading for tonight. Just a quick volunteer, who would like to give me the one or two sentence summary of what the COAST theorem stands for?
That people only evade pollution or environmental harm inside their
Well, isn't that what we were just talking about? The case, their values to get incorporated into their cost.
It is, but
apparently he said it now that his name is on. Well, it's a little bit different. Anyone else want to elaborate on that? You capture an important kernel to it. There's another layer around it about how the allocation of cost occurs.
We talked about whether two potential, like the beneficiary pay or the polluter pay, and how either one of the different amount of how you choose that defines the rights of the other parties.
Okay. I'm going to be mean and say, what does that mean?
So that if it's the beneficiary paying to stop the polluter, then the polluter has the right, the beneficiary to pollute, the beneficiary has to kind of fork over the money, add to the end of the economic loss, kind of obligate versus if it's flip that. If it's polluter's right, it's that one. If the beneficiary's right, then they are have the right to be free.
Okay.
And
the polluter
has to pay
some amount in order to. All right. Let me see if we can sharpen this. Again, really dry, dull stuff. We can talk about next time. I apologize for those of us who study economics to spark real with the concept of supply and demand first. But let's make it real. So I'd like to sort of do a quick demonstration of COAST theorem. I need someone who's willing to be a large industrial magnate for a few minutes. Thank you. Can you pull up right here? Just go take a seat. You own a factory. We're going to represent this factory by an airplane. I'm going to pay you $15 to have you last the airborne for me in about 10 minutes. Just because that's the good I'm going for those who are wondering, I got this from Academy Surplus, Academy Outdoor Stores. I asked them to give me the biggest one they had, the loudest one they had, and they told me that it was terrible. So, I'm hoping that we do this as a short class. But anyway, it's a real class. All right, so, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4,
I need five volunteers on this side of the room. Michael, I think I can send it since you've already fallen on the committee with this one. Unless you want to. There's more cash involved, though, than next
week. Like you this time?
No. Something to think about. Maybe not the cash, but maybe the differential in how above I'm negotiating the consultants. So who would like to be there? Are five neighbors in the back?
Just 11.
Okay. Well, why don't y'all get together right here, please? Under the poster, as Chad pointed out, there are two baseline sets. One is the polluter has the right. The other is the beneficiaries, the neighbors, have the right. So here in this situation, this is going to be the baseline we typically deal with, where the neighbors have the right to say, you can't do it. So you have to persuade them to let you. So I'm going to pay you $15 to do it. Here's your cash. You have 5 minutes to negotiate with your neighbors an amount that you think is appropriate for them to allow you to do.
Doing it lower?
No. I'm serious. If you do that, I expect that security in here. I'm probably going to have to talk to the dean. So I'm hoping to avoid that, but I will do it if you guys fall down and fall apart in negotiations. So, begin.
I'll give you $3 a piece to let me operate my factory.
So, what do y'all say? It's pure cash, and all you have to deal with is a 3-second blast of the horn. And actually, for that amount, I'd let you keep it.
You can go down to the convenience store by yourself.
You can go down to our very chic food bar in the basement and get all sorts of exciting food. Yes, that wasn't against our capacity.
They were two pizzas.
Two.
Depends where you go.
Oh,
we're
the human's life.
So, while they're talking, I have to ask, why $3?
$15 is
so that means if I pay $50, you're getting zero of my business. I mean, it's a little too late back now, but I'm just curious about that.
Right. All right,
why are you guys talking together about it? He's offering it to you separately.
Oh, yes.
It's not a question. You can take the cash, regardless of what they do, it's decided. The problem is, if any one of you holds out, it doesn't go forward. So if you said yes, what about the other ones? Yes.
As long as it's like borrowing.
I'm going to live over here. That's three.
No.
No.
Not anyone back there.
No, two no's. Why?
Because that will bring consequences not only to me, but like the people who's around me and the people who live with me.
Why do you care about them? You're a rational human on the cat. If you take this deal, you'd have 2 seconds of discomfort, you'd walk away $3.
I don't think money can afford. I mean, it's priceless.
So, what would be an amount that would, if it's really priceless?
You can buy my house.
Buy your house?
So I can just buy another one somewhere else.
Or a 3-second blast in the horn?
All right, more realistically, let's say, if he offered you $100.
Still no.
Yeah.
I think you're screwed. All right, I'm sorry, you as well?
One-time blast,
that's it. All right, so we're coming up. We have another 2 minutes. You realize that you get nothing if your neighbors don't agree. Does that affect how much that you're willing perhaps internally exchange with each other?
Sure.
I'm not seeing a sort of Donald Trumpian approach.
Well, what about everything else that is about it? It's going to affect it, even if I'm not there.
why do you care about anyone else? You're irrational.
Everyone else wants the money, so clearly they're willing.
Because it's morally, morally right.
You're going to be a pariah by your neighbors who you're depriving of cash.
I'm in my right.
Okay, so you, it's just wrong from your
perspective.
I have to say, the idea that there are certain things that are just not economically cognizable, I couldn't resist. I'll just pass this around. But I thought this cartoon captured the sentiment exactly. Just pass it around. So anyway, 1 minute left. You're all about to give me back my money. I've been enjoying this so far. And it's because, and I'm actually, so who, 3 yes or 4 yes?
So four, you're the one juror holdout. Yeah, that's fine.
They're going to burn your house and steal your dog.
I have insurance.
All right, I'm sorry to say, but unless you can think of any solution, I can't think of one. This is about to break.
Where do you get to press it? Where do you get to press it?
Oh. No. This isn't about your personality. You do it as a plus. You get depressed.
I kind of wanted, like yesterday, to dump the seed into the chlorons.
All right.
I wanted to see it.
So, put it this way. Under the beneficiary approach, right now we have no transaction. Even though he was offering the full value of the economic benefit for the action we're talking about to you guys, he's taking nothing. And you guys couldn't reallocate the money within yourself to buy her off by contributing some of your money to her. Am I correct?
Well,
we
would have bought her off,
but okay. All right. What I might suggest is the recalcitrant holdout who says, hell no, I won't do it, might fall in the category of a transaction cost. Having to pay different amounts to different people based on their varying preferences is something that you have to calibrate, measure, and overcome, which makes it less liquid, makes it more difficult, more expensive to reach a deal. So, under this rule right now, we almost have a deal. We don't, okay? Let me change the rules a little now. I want my money back. This is the beneficiary. Okay, I'm sorry, that's the polluter phase. I got it wrong. Let's do beneficiary now. You get to decide. You get to blow the horn. Now, before you do, when you do, you get $15 from me. All right? Okay. You guys have the right. You have the have to persuade him not to do it. He has the right, you guys have to pay him not to. You have 5 minutes. What are you going to offer?
Okay. Are we allowed to put this in?
Of course.
Okay.
So that's your cash.
Okay.
That's what you can offer. He's having to forego $15.
Does he
know before y'all show each other, I should warn you, you didn't all get the same amounts.
Okay.
And so as a result, some of you may have different incentives or price points that you need to negotiate or figure out.
Cool. Sure. Okay, so $10 total?
Why would you offer him $10?
No, me and you. Not me and you.
Together.
Together.
Why would you collectively offer him $10? Because he's getting 15 from me if he presses the button. Why would he
Oh, okay, I got you. Now I understand. Okay, so we got a one.
$15.50.
Yes.
So 50 cents is enough to tip the scales.
Maybe not, but we can negotiate.
He's a rash economic actor, and it should be enough. So, okay, I'm sorry. So what do you think?
I don't know. One homeowner was pretty vindictive the other transactions.
All right. Grudges are not rash economic.
if it's a one-time loss, then, I mean, yeah, it's a little bit more, but I have a lot of urge here.
That is a one-time class.
Yeah, it is a one-time class, so it is more. If it was like a continuous thing, oh, 15 and a half payment one time would be done.
Yeah, so you have to find some way to value the future class you're using as well, as well as the present value cost. And that's actually, I assume in your torque classes, you talked about Uber cement and some of the permanent junction cases. So that's essentially what you're talking about. Alright, we're talking about a one-time blast. You put $15.50 on the table with one person screwing the rest of her neighbors. Anything else? Do you accept that?
It could be a little higher.
Is that yes or no?
No.
But that was a terrible deposition question. Are you willing to accept the offer as screwing up the table?
No.
Okay. Well, you have 1 minute. You guys, what do you think? For the rest of the audience watching, they have more than $15.
Okay. The offer is $20.
Whoa. Okay. What do you think?
I think that's a good deal.
Okay, so you'll take that?
Yeah.
So how are y'all distributing the 20?
He's paying for the other
five. So I'm not sure.
Can you take the cost of the extra $5 from the $15?
Okay, because you, how much do you have?
We got 25.
Did y'all know that?
And
you have how much?
A dollar.
You can see why she said screw you. Right. And the three of you in the middle, how much do you have?
Five.
All right, so you can see why that disproportionate initial allocation of rights can distort what sort of offers get made by individuals. I can tell you're a troublemaker in transactions already. I'll remember that for the rest of the semester.
Okay.
So, but you're willing to, so that each of you are offering how much then? You're dividing $15.50 by four, and then adding five on top? The math is getting a little complex.
Remaining $4.50. So.
Okay. All right. So we do have a transaction. Now, I will say, would it have made a difference if I had given one of you also $20 and that there's more inequity between the three parties, all of your five parties? Would you feel like it's unfair that you didn't pay the same amount as someone who has maybe five times as much as you? Under rational economic theory, you should.
Yeah.
And behavior economic theory, absolutely. All right, so with that, before we go any further, I'm gonna collect my cash back. For the outrage and suffering you're going to incur from being a university college. All right, here's the important thing. According to the Coase theorem, they should have reached exactly the same number. They should have gotten exactly the same outcome. The Coase theorem basically says when transaction costs are zero, it doesn't matter who holds the right, whether it's the polluter, whether it's the beneficiaries. They should negotiate to reach the same efficient meeting point that minimizes, that is the most efficient outcome and minimizes costs. Now, that means effectively what really matters is transaction costs. Truth be told, the transaction cost for him to negotiate with all of you typically be lower. It's one person making a deal to a collective group. He deals with me one gets to be a sticker, might have different names. You guys had to all collectively get together and come up with a team offer and deal with $3. So transaction costs typically in that arrangement are higher. That's why you tend to sort of have a more difficult situation when you have the beneficiary. But the bottom line, mathematically, economically, they're equivalent. Does that make sense for everyone? Now, here's the other thing. Who ends up holding the cash once you're done with the addition? Once the transaction takes place, who ends up putting the money in their pocket besides me? Here. The polluter has the right. He keeps the cash. Here. Even though you reach an efficient point at the price, they keep the cash. The point of that is that the Coase theorem doesn't care about the allocation of the eventual riches in the transaction. The initial allocation of rights results in enormous allocation impacts of who has money at the end of the day. But from an economic efficiency perspective, they're still exactly the same. Why is that matter? Because we've had to fight that issue already. Right now, you can go back to your chairs if you'd like, unless you want to try another example here in a minute.
I'm kidding. I only need two for the next one. You're safe.
I thought you guys were going to scatter as soon as you possibly could. And you're free to. To give you an example, one of the proposals to regulate greenhouse gases in the United States was there was a bill proposed called the American Clean Energy Thesis.
It's terrible. It's been so long. It's like 2008. It was proposed by John McCain.
And the bottom line was it initially allocated the right to pollute to people who are already polluting. What does that mean? It means that instead of having an auction where there was an allocation of rights, everyone just paid for their initial right to pollute. Instead, people had that right and then were able to sell it. So even though you got to the same point of a certain number of tons of CO2 that got emitted, who got money at the end of the day made an enormous difference as to what type of credit you have. The historical allocation of credits as opposed to just the straight up line auction. So this Coase theorem we're talking about actually has multi-billion-dollar impacts on environmental law.
All clear so far?
Any questions? Because I know it sounds a little bit abstract, but any environmental lawyer worth their salt and will deal with in the real world will know about the Coase theorem. They'll certainly know about free riders. Okay? Another thing they're going to know about is the tragedy of the commons. I have a sneaking suspicion you guys have already talked about this in property law classes. All of them? Everybody? It's familiar territory? No? You don't want to say it one way or the other? This is the famous case of the sheep and the field. All right, everyone's heard of it. Yeah. Bottom line. Tragedy of the commons is when you have a good that's owned by everybody, and that tends to promote an overuse of that good in such a way that it destroys the value for everybody. To make it more concrete, picture that classic field. And you have sheep grazing on it.
These are not sheep that are owned by any of your collective village. Everyone has their own sheep. So picture each one of you has your own furry mammal grazing in the field.
Each of you get a certain amount of income from the sheep that's grazing. Well, if you put an extra sheep on the field in the middle of the night, you get all of the economic value from that sheep. The cost of that sheep eating the extra grass, the cost of that sheep causing damage to the field is relatively small, but it's borne by everybody, not you.
Again, that wholehearted economic actor perspective, screw the world, do what makes the most money for you. I realize that's
some judgment on where we're putting it, but nonetheless, you're going to put that sheep there.
Well, here's the problem. If Kevin puts his sheep there, is there any reason why Kyle wouldn't want to put his sheep there and then John Michael? Everybody has exactly the same incentive, the exact same economic calculation. Result? Here's the dilemma. Here's the strange paradox. As everyone puts more and more sheep on, that extra kick you get starts shrinking because you're depleting the common resource. It becomes a classic Red Queen's race. You end up destroying the collective value, and the extra economic value you get from putting your extra sheep on starts to shrink. And the problem is that eventually you get to a point where everyone loses. That's the value of commons. As you might expect, this is, again, the dominant paradigm in environmental law. The concept that you have in freely available public good rights that everyone has access to, but individuals get a separate benefit from taking advantage of things like clean water, things like clean air, things like landfill storage space. You end up with essentially a race to the bottom that ends up, this perfectly rational economic calculation ends up destroying the collective value of the good. Now hopefully that matches up what you guys learned in property law. Anything you'd add to that? Who'd you have for property law, like Kirsten? Oh, wow. Definitely. Anything she said that conflicts with me, she's right.
Anything you'd add? Okay. There's a particular instantiation of this called the prisoner's dilemma. This also shows up in the marble law. It also shows up in the marble law enforcement. Did you guys talk about that at the property law, too? Okay. This one's a little harder to explain, so it's probably best to demonstrate it. Two volunteers who have not yet been subjected to volunteering. And that excludes you guys, it excludes almost everyone on this side of the room. You guys, come over here. I need you to stand back to back. Hold out your right hand. Straight. Not now. I have decided, but I'm not sure, to have been cheated in this class. Here's the deal. If one of you squeals on the other, you get to keep an A. The person you squeal on gets an F. If both of you squeal, you both get C's. Without looking at each other's hands, which of you are willing to squeal on the other? Some soul wrestling going on here. It's going to be fun to watch a video later. Come on, Kyle, gotta make the call. All right. Everyone, would you care to share with them the outcome?
Not yet. You're not.
That's really a hero.
So you get the F, you get the A, but hopefully we'll never sleep again. But here's the catch. You get a perfectly rational decision. Think about it this way. Squeal, they both get a hit. Not as big a hit as they would have gotten, but still a fairly significant hit. A gets -3, B gets -3. If A squeals, but B is silent, A gets everything, B gets a -10. Same thing in the other direction. If A is silent, but B squeals,
A gets minus 10, B gets a benefit. But if they're both silent, they both get a walkaway benefit. Here's the calculation. If you're a rational actor, one of the most effective strategies for dealing with this kind of game theory situation is to minimize your loss. What's the max min of what you're going to face? So for A, here, if they squeal, the worst case they're going to face is minus 3. If they're silent, their worst case is minus 10. So the rational decision is turn on them, rat them out, throw them under the bus. Sorry, pal. Same calculation, though, applies for B. What that means is that individually rational action collectively leads to an outcome that is less favorable for both. Police interrogators use this all the time. That's why it's called the prisoner's dilemma. Why am I mentioning it here? This is the engine, to some extent, that drives the tragedy of the commons. In addition as well, I will tell you this exact dynamic I've had to deal with in enforcement negotiations. The government is very effective at making deals with super bud sites, where parties that step forward and do things first get better terms than people who come up later. And people who refuse, who are recalcitrant, minus 10. So be prepared to deal with this dynamic in your practice. It'll apply to antitrust, it'll apply to antitrust. But again, this economic concept is foundational in environmental law.
So I'll take a pause. That sort of hang together for everyone so far. Okay?
Because we only have one last concept to cover, but it's a doozy. How many of you had to do cost-benefit assessments? Really? In what context?
Just for grad school class.
Well, so this is an academic setting. So why did you do that, Chris? So roughly, when you did the cost-benefit assessment, what were you doing?
We had an Excel spreadsheet. We were looking at the cost of the and figuring out at what efficient rate it needs to be done.
Okay. So the cost was the cost of the goods, labor, supplies, okay, permanent cost. And then the benefit was what?
Profit and
so how much money you're making?
Right.
So essentially, that is as simple as possible. It's true. It's just a balance. Cost-benefit assessment is basically assessing what degree of cost you're incurring with an action stacked up against its benefits. And right now, federal regulatory policy, you cannot pass a regulation in environmental law unless it passes the cost-benefit assessment. Now, would anyone disagree with that? It goes back 40 years. But it makes sense to promulgate a rule that doesn't pass a cost-benefit assessment. I can't tell if it's agreeing or it's just been very thoughtful. Yes?
Who gets to quantify the cost of the balance? And what metrics do you use?
Why don't we do the reason to walk with us with it and say, why would that matter?
Well, because you can quantify it in different methods. Always the question of like, how do you quantify, like in the reading, can you quantify the value of health or life or stuff like that?
Exactly. So your theory, your premise is that who makes the call reflects a judgment as to the inherent preferences that steer your decision.
Well, when you accuse them of steering your decision, but it might steer their methodology, or it might steer their starting assumptions about, yeah.
All right. To answer your question, also management and budget. Awesome information for your assessment that you can get at the White House makes that call. There's actually a circular that sets out exactly what processes agencies have to go through to assess what the cost is, including the cost of compliance, including soft costs on projects. So the interesting question then still nonetheless is, A, I'm not sure I agree with you about being such a nice person.
Yeah, well, see, there are these consequences to that.
Friends watching from the APA, I apologize to you for saying this. For example, the rule that just got proposed on the front page of the New York Times this morning, one that's proposed to revoke President Obama's clean power plan, the one that will reduce CO2 emissions in the power plant. The new rule has the active regulatory impact analysis and cost-benefit assessment that's longer than the rule. And it is under a strict examination and a lot of criticism that the numbers have been selected very carefully to generate falsely positive. And that's not common. You have a lot of choices about how you counter the impact assessment, the cost-benefit assessment, that gives you opportunity to influence. The other thing, this is sort of the economic environmental question. It assumes that everything has a price, doesn't it? And I'm just kind of curious, what would be the value that you as an individual put on the human body? It's not fair to say who's. So maybe you got run over by a bus after class this evening. You find a writing check for a family for $200K, and that's it. Everyone's happy.
It's writing a check
for All right. Does that sound right to everyone else? Do you think it should be more?
Well, I think it depends on a bunch of factors on what kind of job they have, the writing pay, all that.
I'm smiling because your answer is delightful for two reasons. He just gave the perfect lawyer answer to the question. It matters exactly. If it's a youngster, if it's a professional, if it's someone at the end of life, if it's all in terminal cancer, if it's someone in eggshell planting, it's not real. The number changes. That's exactly what you do in a wrongful death policy. Does anyone here find their skin rubbed the wrong way with the idea that someone's life is worth more than someone else's? No, no, seriously, I'm asking because the answer to tort is not the answer for emotions.
I completely understand the rational reason why you would want to say that, but I think there are too many unquantifiables for you to just say the amount of happiness that someone brings to other people versus, say, manager or partner of a law firm.
So, people manager.
I mean, there are plenty of professionals out there who I wouldn't necessarily equate as being as high value as somebody who maybe say only makes $35,000.
Wow, that's an interesting rule position. I like that. In the sense of that, the managing partner in St. Albans may not be worth as much as a church pastor.
Yeah.
We could have a long discussion over a future year on that. I'll simply say, sadly, rational economic factor. It's all about how you translate into cash. So unless we find somebody with a method that values that people aim to avoid, that people would collectively chip in to say George Bailey.
I mean, the amount of people that go to a funeral.
Right.
The amount of people that go to a funeral. I guarantee you the pastor might have a funeral.
That's interesting.
I mean, obviously that's not just.
Yeah. Well, I like it. I'll just simply say, unfortunately, that may be a good answer for a tour in and back to our cars. But from a regulatory perspective, you have to set one up and up. There is an attempt by EPA to actually give elderly people less value for their lives lost from the rule. And you would not believe the storm cover. People were enormously pissed off. And just because you're 60, you're worth half as much as 33. So, from a regulatory perspective, OMB and OIR are pretty straightforward. Agencies can set their own number. They don't have to all have the same number, but they have to set a system that applies across the board. Now, that's just human lives. How much is a ball of work? How much is an ecosystem work? How much is a non-easy sky and big end?
those are part of the environmental information. They have to go through the cost-benefit assessment under two. They actually try to calibrate and measure how much the market would value those particular intangible services. All the simple way of saying it will come back to cost-benefit assessment. I will simply also say the Supreme Court has become very aggressive about overturning environmental regulations that it has failed to account for costs proposed by the pollution. And that's likely to get even more problematic under I suspect Judge Kavanaugh will share that perspective, that it would be arbitrary and capricious for a rule to be promulgated by an agency that failed to pass cost-benefit assessment or failed to assess cost for the payments. That sounds rational, some of the fact that the Air Act specifically says you can't make cost. So, does that make sense for everyone? You have a sense of how these foundational theories of our law are related to each other. Okay, because we're about to leave it behind. We now have the vocabulary and concepts. We're going to start with next week. It's torts. Now, I assume you guys are all torts experts because you just had torts. No? You didn't have torts yet?
I don't have to take those classes for the first year.
Okay. Then I'm glad you said that. We will make sure that we're fair and everybody's in the same class. These guys, who do you have for torts? What? Oh, torts. Okay, then you're in good shape then. You guys have torts students?
For a while.
Yeah.
It should be great. You've got the bar exam again. It's so cold. Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to walk through a particular public nuisance and private nuisance with an eye towards trespass. Those are the ones that are the primary drivers of environmental law from a tort perspective. Now, I'm going to warn you. That means we're going to be talking about cases that are about 100 years old. Again, I'm very concerned that some of this is drying water. So what I'm going to do is ask all of you on Monday to read with a very particular perspective. The biggest tort claims in play right now are lawsuits over climate change, trying to hold people liable for damages caused by climate change. In particular, there's lawsuits in California, Colorado, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, New York, all trying to hold major energy corporations headquartered in Houston liable for climate change. They all use the same theories of public and private nuisance, trespass, or hazardous activities.
So, it sounds more like property.
Oh.
Because I did take property.
Well, then you're set.
Okay.
That's true. You guys have all got that covered.
Great.
So we're all the same place then. I'm going to ask you to read it from the perspective that you're going to take everything that we're going to read in class and use it to argue on behalf of or against climate tools. And what I'm going to do is just to assign to you randomly which side you have to defend. But what I've found is that reading cases are measurably more interesting when you actually read them with purpose. And I want you guys to read them like these are weapons. What you want to take out, what you're going to use, how you're deploying it, how it's together, and most importantly, how to anticipate what your opponents are going to say. So you're not just sort of picking, you're also anticipating. Okay. With that, we're getting too close to the end of the class, unless you guys have questions, please look around. Yes?
Are the readings on the website for next week?
Yeah. Correct. Yeah, everything's up on the website for readings.
Okay.
The only thing that's likely to change the syllabus at this point, two things. One, I'm going to take a field trip somewhere. So we'll get that information as I get through this. The other is, as we get further in the semester, I will either trim the readings down, because I'm going to see a lot of pages once again. And as we get closer, I may start trying to figure out which ones we really need to get through. The other is that I may, but I can't take advantage of guest speakers. So I'm hoping to get, I think, one of the top toxic substances practitioners in the world. I'm going to talk to this. Practice your piece, and it's a really cool guy. I'm hoping to be on the top climate tort leaders. So just so you guys can hear from someone else. But that's the only reason to keep an eye on the syllabus. The readings for the next couple of weeks will be the same. Anything else? You're free. Go home. Have fun. Unless you have class, I guess. You're a day student.
She was.
You're a day student.
Yes, but I'm.
This is her first class.
Yeah, I'm thinking of like, I guess now.
By the way, thank you for being intransigent. It made a lot more fun.
Huh?
Thank you for being tough. It made a lot more fun.
That's just me. That's just the way it is. Yeah, I am a former LLM.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm doing the dual program, doing the energy and the U.S. law, so I can take the bar.
So congratulations. You get an extra hour in the final exam.
Yes, I do, actually. I forgot about it.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to... I